Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2025. A few episodes back, we were joined by Zigzag sharing his GeoGuessr perspective as a player, but today I'm joined by David Morris, also known as Bloom, one of the scene's most recognizable and passionate GeoGuessr commentators, who's been helping bring competitive GeoGuessr to life through sharp analysis, community engagement, and a deep love for geography-fueled gameplay. In this episode, we'll unpack Bloom's journey from player to caster, what goes into preparing for a high-stakes broadcast, and the mental pressure of fast-paced formats like Jules and NMPZ. We'll also talk about balancing deep meta knowledge with accessibility for casual viewers, the unique cognitive demands of GeoGuessr, and where the future of the scene might be headed as well. Bloom, how are you, brother? What's been happening?
Doing great. An amazing intro, and yeah, amazing topics there. Like, this man is prepared.
I'm keen to unpack.
Yeah.
I was ecstatic to have Zigzag on from a player perspective and sort of have an insight, I guess, to what it's like up in stage, you know, in a one-on-one format, the pressure of making guesses and the stuff like that. But I guess you see things from a different perspective being a caster, right? So yeah, I'm really keen to sort of dig into it and sort of explore your mindset.
Great.
So tell us, how did you get into GeoGuessr? What was the story? What was the origin story? What was the journey so far that you've been through?
Okay, yeah, so it's a little long-winded. There are a lot of steps, but I'll keep it as brief as possible. But basically, at some point, early 2017, 2018 maybe, I found a random GeoWizard video, okay? Now, GeoWizard is like the guy. He like gets everybody, or he used to. Now it's Rainbolt.
Yeah.
But he used to be the guy who got everybody into the game who had never played.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm on YouTube, recommended. GeoWizard, like, highlight video came up. I click on it. I'm like, what? How is that possible? Like, I was a forested road, and he's, you know, on top of it. Like, how did he do that?
Yeah.
And I casually watched him for a while, but then it wasn't until COVID hit, 2020, I would say October 2020, maybe September. It kind of popped back into my head again, and I was like, oh, let me get the game. So I got the game, started playing, didn't know too much about it, would just hope for the best by myself or like with some friends who knew nothing about the game.
Love it.
But then around that same time, I actually decided to become a Twitch streamer because I was taking a year off from college. I did a year of college during my second semester. COVID started. We got sent home. I did a music production and engineering degree.
Cool.
But at that time, that's what I was in the middle of, and I really did not want to do that online.
Mm.
So I took a whole gap year off. It was really weird. Do a year of school, COVID hits, and then like gap year, and then went back. But during that gap year, I decided to become a streamer. And so I started streaming, and very quickly, one of the main games became GeoGuessr. And there I realized how big of a community there was, even at that time in late 2020, early 2021, still such a big community. And I noticed one of the most beautiful parts about the community was that it was all just built around sharing and hanging out and teaching each other. And Twitch was kind of the place to do that at the time. That doesn't exist as much nowadays, but that's really what hooked me in the beginning. Also, because, you know, you're stuck at home for COVID. And I was like, let me see the world.
Yeah, sure.
I'm getting on GeoGuessr. But yeah, so that went well. And at the time, I ended up becoming one of the biggest GeoGuessr streamers at the time, and met a ton of people in the scene. And then at that summer, 2021, I went back to school and kind of had to stop streaming, but stayed in touch with everybody in the community. And it was right around the time I left that then a guy I just slightly knew named Rainbolt started streaming himself, like right when I quit. And right when he started, I would like come in his stream sometimes, say what's up, and he would be like, Bloom's in my chat, you know, like it was a very like, you know, reversal kind of thing where like he knew who I was. But now everybody knows who he is because he's the GOAT. But what he started to do at that time is make TikToks, which is something I never did. And he just blew up there. And that really did so much for the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then another fast forward to the summer of 2022 now, I get a DM from Rainbolt. Trevor Rainbolt. I get a DM from him. It's right after a video collaboration with Ludwig had come out. And he goes, hey, so like the video came out like a Wednesday. Now it's like Friday. He messages me, yo, tomorrow I'm going to host a tournament. Do you want to hang out in VC with me? And I was like, yeah, all right, bro. Like, let's do it. Next day, he'd been getting averaging like 100 viewers. Next day, I join him in a VC for attorney, and he's at like 1,500, like right when the stream starts, like just from doing this Ludwig video. And we hosted this tournament together, and it was super fun, and people got super into it. He posted on YouTube. It did crazy well there. That led to Launders looking at it. I'm giving you the whole, like, history right now. But that led to Launders being like, this is so cool. Let me sponsor your next tournament. He gave us like $500, which was like the biggest prize pool GeoGuessr had ever seen. And we were like freaking out. And we did that just the next Saturday. Right. And then it turned into every Saturday for almost a year. Me and him and then a bunch of other people hosted these tournaments. And it was like the only professional pro scene for GeoGuessr.
Yeah.
And it was at that time where I was playing in them. And so I was like pro, but also casting. It was very strange the way we did it. It was very just like bare bones.
Yeah.
Like I would literally cast and then my game would come up and then I'd play. And then I'd like jump back in the cast. And then like Rainbolt would be casting and we'd all be casting. But then whenever Rainbolt would play, it would become his team comms. You know, it was very just like...
Yeah.
We were just doing our own thing.
Yeah.
Not insanely professional, but... viewership was really good and people really liked it. And then, yeah, eventually they kind of died out. He kind of couldn't handle too much of the stress of being like the sole person in charge of an entire professional scene.
Mm.
And he was like always disappointing somebody, which makes sense. And so, and then there was some cheating.
That's tricky to deal with. Yeah.
Yeah. But so it kind of died out. And then eventually, finally, to top it, to end it all out, the game themselves finally go in like May 2023. They're like, we want to make an official scene. Rainbolt, what do we do? Rainbolt's like, talk to Bloom and me. Like, you got to get Bloom.
Yeah.
Us two and whatever. We helped them plan out a whole first one. And now we have a scene. That's my story.
Damn.
That's the whole thing.
That's crazy. Wow. Yeah. How does it feel to have such a pivotal impact, I guess, on a game that you just found and now all of a sudden it's developed into something that hundreds of thousands of people enjoy, watch, you know?
Yeah, that's a great question. Honestly, it feels quite good and I don't feel like I necessarily... I don't know if I necessarily like was like trying for a lot of that stuff to happen, you know?
Yeah.
It just sort of went that way. And because my passion for it was there always, and it kind of just like led to these things happening. And now, you know, it's an honor. It feels very kind when people like say that they enjoy what I do in GeoGuessr, you know?
That's epic. Yeah, wow. I imagine reflecting back, you know, sort of going through so many experiences and I guess iterations of different micro tournaments you did to then all of a sudden going and watching like the World Cup, right? GeoGuessr World Cup, and it's come a long way, right?
Yeah. I mean, I remember at the very first World Cup, me and Trevor just like when it ended, we just like looked at each other and we were like, dude, what just happened? Like, because... it was in like nothing existed for us. And when I was doing the Rainbolt tourneys every weekend, it's not like I was like getting paid or anything. And I did them every week and they would be hours. And it was because I just wanted to be there. And me and him both felt really passionately about trying to show the world, especially the esports world, what had been going on behind like closed doors for so long. Like we had been having tournaments that were at that level for years before, but they'd get like 50 viewers. Nobody knew it existed. And finally Rainbolt was able to use his platform to show everybody the amount of insane work that gets put into being good at GeoGuessr, you know? And so, yeah, we looked at each other at the World Cup and we were just like, dude, we did it. What just happened? Like, we did it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. What was it like? I guess take us into like the first big LAN event. I guess from a player perspective, is there a bit of uncertainty in terms of like, we don't know who's the best right now? Like, what does this look like, I guess, on a LAN setting? I guess some of these players have been playing in their room for such a long time. If we go to a LAN setting, are they still going to perform? You know, what does that sort of look like, I guess, for the first one you did?
Yeah. That was a huge question because that's like such a classic in esports. Like, you perform online, can you perform on LAN? That's always like such a question, especially with a live audience. And our first event had like 400, 450 live audience. So it wasn't like insane, but it was a number where if you're not used to being in front of a crowd, and the crowd was like 180 surrounding the stage, like looking down. So the optics were very cool. And so we had some questions. Also, GeoGuessr for a long time has been notoriously known for being a community that people are very private in, actually, at least before LANs. Like, no one ever wanted the face reveal. Many people didn't even want to like join a VC to like have people hear their voice. I'm not exactly sure where that comes from. I've wondered if that has to do with maybe the nature of the game and how it's like they're nervous of like being found or something. I have no idea.
Do you think it plays into like a, I don't want to sound bad, but like a nerdy aspect, like it's geography?
Yes, that's also
like, it's a little bit different towards playing Counter-Strike or Rocket League, right? Where it's an actual bit more of a game, where it's a bit more real life based.
Yeah, for sure. And to be good at GeoGuessr is a very niche, and I will call it nerdy thing, being someone who has been very good at it before.
Yeah.
Proud to be a nerd, but yeah, and I guess maybe those types of people are more private, but yeah, so when we were going into that first World Cup, basically the way they picked who was going to play is they asked me and Rainbolt to submit a list, each our own lists of 20 players that we thought should be invited.
Okay, cool.
And then the last four would be through an open wildcard, like sort of tournament. And they really wanted country diversity. That's really important to them. And that is a topic we maybe could get into later too, because that's a slight point of contention in some people's view of the esport right now, is that the game prioritizes country diversity sometimes over like who's the best. But anyways, they really wanted that from us. So we both gave lists and... both gave lists, submitted them in, and our lists were like almost the same without talking to each other, which was very interesting. So we both kind of had an idea of who we thought the best was. They also had to be 18, which was another thing that left some people out, because the RE sports scene is still 18 plus. And yeah, no duplicates from one country was like what they were asking for. So... and we ended up giving pretty similar lists. They invited pretty much from our two lists. They made a couple of their own choices. And they had that wild card. But yeah, you know, there was a lot of people at that first event that we saw their face for the first time there, for instance. And there were some players. So like there's a player named Fao, who used to be go by The Fungus Among Us. But just for optics, you know, it's... decided to change his name to Fao. He was a player who, going in, people kind of thought, oh, this guy's like all right, but he was one of the players who actually got really invigorated by being in LAN and ended up getting to the top four. And so he was really considered an underdog and then made it super far, and that kind of became like a story that people kind of know and follow. And then there were some players, I'd say the best example is there was a player named Harmless from Norway. He was kind of expected to be top four, probably.
Yeah.
And he went out in groups. And I think a lot of people think it's because he was just really nervous being in person.
Yeah.
So those are probably the two, like, clearest examples of that.
Mm.
Yeah, it definitely plays a factor. And we've continued to see that lands going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, epic. Yeah, it's interesting. I think, like, even working with lots of my players in the past, like, predominantly, especially going to LAN for the first time, it's a hard experience, and I guess you don't know what to expect as well, and there's so many uncertainties, especially I guess as a coach you have to prepare for things that can go wrong, right? And there's other, I guess, micro things that you just don't think about. Like the biggest thing that I had going to my first LAN in Sweden was like the lights. Like one of my players used to play in like a pitch black room, or not like pitch black, minimal lighting. All of a sudden, he's got light all shining on him. It's tricky, right? So I think it's an interesting thing whereby, you know, you look, I guess, in terms of esports as a whole, online, people play really well, but then one small micro factor to change all of a sudden can change the performance output drastically.
Yes, for sure. I actually, you're making me think of one of the things that is like maybe a little bit unique about GeoGuessr Esports is for like Rocket League, of course, you know, if players had to come and they couldn't like bring their own controller, or like they got sat with a controller they had never used, like that would really throw them off.
Yep.
In GeoGuessr, that's the monitor. And they have the monitors standardized, so everybody's are at the same. But I know some players, like Zigzag, for instance, plays with like pretty high saturation on his monitor.
Right.
And because the game is all about just looking at things and trying to figure out where it is, you know, players will get very used to being able to distinguish things with their own sort of like contrast settings and saturation settings and all of that. And then when they go to LAN, the monitors will be just all set to the exact same for every player.
Right.
I have seen that throw off some people.
Wow. Yeah. Interesting. You can't change, I guess, monitor settings, because in Rocket League you can change everything. Like if you're like an SSD, and then when you play you get an SSD and it's got all your monitor settings, but I guess that's a way to standardize it.
Yeah. It might be good for GeoGuessr to do that, to maybe let people. So in Rocket League people get to like plug in.
Yeah, so on
SSD when they
on Rocket League we have Media Day, and on Media Day we'll go on stage.
Yeah.
And all three boys will set up their PC, set got on Rocket League, do their all individual settings, and then they'll all do monitor settings, like brightness, refresh rate, if they want G-Sync, whatever. And then they'll just get put on SSD, and then whenever we play, that SSD will just get put in, and it'll be all that player's settings.
That's great. we should use that. We'd get less complaints. They did just start letting players bring their own mouse and keyboard.
Oh, only now? Really?
Yeah, just in this season. Yeah.
Wow, why was that such a thing that wasn't allowed in the past?
I don't think it was. I don't even know if it was on purpose. I think people just didn't really think about it, and then I think like a mouse actually like broke or something. I can't remember exactly what happened.
Yeah,
a player got really mad about something, about what they were given, and they were like, "Okay, just bring your own." I believe it was something kind of along those lines.
Okay, interesting. Have you seen those mouses where you like you can click in the scroll wheel and then all of a sudden it's just like super fast? I'm wondering if that would be like if someone's got like a mouse wheel where they can just and like zoom in instantly. That could be a new meta.
That would
strat.
Be crazy. Wait, yeah. I get. Well, it might be a little hard to be like super accurate with where you zoom.
Sure, you could practice.
I could see that. Yeah. If you had it practiced and dialed, it'd be like the first mechanical thing.
Yeah,
because that's another great point about GeoGuessr esports compared to every other esport, is that like most esports you have, you know, game sense,
yeah,
but then you also have mechs. There's no mechs in GeoGuessr, really. A little bit, but not really,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's a key differentiator, which I think makes it so fascinating.
Yeah
Awesome. Now I guess going into your first cast, what was that like for you? I guess, you know, how did you, I guess, pave your way to find your voice? I've had a few casters, Rocket League caster, I think Valorant caster on, maybe CS caster in the past. And it's always interesting to sort of hear and understand how individual casters find their way of casting and I guess find a style that suits them best, whether it be like really specific in terms of info or stats or something like that, or whether it's a little bit more relaxed for the viewer for that perspective. How did you sort of find your pathway in terms of what you like to do and how you like to, I guess, commentate?
Yeah, great question. So back to those like Rainbolt tournaments, when I first got asked to join VC with him, I had never casted. I had never imagined myself to be a caster.
Right.
And I joined the call and I just kind of started. Like, it just felt right. I was like, oh, there's a lot of people watching. Let me be like professional. And that was kind of the only thing going through my head.
Yeah.
And I've watched a lot of esports. Like, I grew up at first watching a lot of CS, like CSGO stuff. Then transitioned to watching an absurd amount of RLCS. So I've heard a lot of casting in my life. But I had never done it. And I did grow up as an actor. So starting when I was 8, I started acting. And was very serious in acting and would love to do it again someday. But then once I went to college, I stopped because was studying other things. But that background, I would say, is kind of what has made both streaming and then starting the cast feel pretty natural.
Yeah.
So I went in and I just kind of went for it. And at first it was kind of what I was saying. It was just be professional. And I would just, I kind of trended toward the play-by-play style of casting. With a bit of like color commentary. But mostly what ended up happening off the bat is kind of Rainbolt did the color. I did the play-by-play. But again, it was loose and it wasn't super specific. But then, we went to that first LAN and I hadn't done a Rainbolt tournament in a while, but like a year. But I was I was just like, all right, it's just going to be the same thing. Like, once I'm sitting there, it's just GeoGuessr, you know? And I got paired up with a woman named Geo, actually. Funnily enough, that's her username, unrelated to GeoGuessr.
Right.
But she is a professional caster and has done casting for other games. So I got paired up with her as my casting partner for that event. And I know a lot more now. And I probably would have like had some conversations going in about like kind of who was going to do what and that sort of thing. But we ended up kind of just, you know, improvising it, going with the flow. And it trended toward, again, me doing more play-by-play, her being color. And I would say that worked pretty well. And that kind of, I also did analyst desk at that event, which was something I didn't know I was going to do until I was there. And I didn't really understand the analyst desk at this stage. Like, I did, but again, not like I do now, having like actually done it more. And I actually had some really good conversations with Launders at one point, and him kind of teaching me about what it really is to be an analyst. But anyways, at this point, I was like, and again, I was just improvising it. And I was sitting backstage at the end of the event with Paula and Launders, and they were like, man, you killed that. Like, it seems like you've done this before. And I was like, to be honest with you, I grew up as an actor and I just told myself to play the role of an esports caster. And they were like, all right, bro. And it worked. And now I would say I'm not doing that anymore. Like, now I actually feel like I am a caster. I know what I'm doing more. But in moments where I felt less comfortable, I would just, you know, resort back to almost feeling like I was acting. And just staying super focused and just kind of winging it.
I love that. That's such a good metaphor, analogy to sort of utilize, I guess, utilizing previous acting experience, imagining you playing the role. Smart.
It was fun. They were like, what? Because they like do this. That's like, they just, this is for years.
Yeah.
And they're like, dude, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I was like, it makes sense in my head. Okay. I promise.
Damn. Love that. Awesome. What was it like, I guess, preparing? Because I think I've dealt with a few casters, and I guess going into whether it be like a match, obviously there's a bit of analysis that goes on your side to bring value to the cast. What does that look like, I guess, even nowadays going into a cast? What does the preparation look like? Does it look like having a look at previous matches where players have done well, where they've struggled, potential countries that favour a particular player? What does it look like stats-wise for you?
Yeah, so for me, okay, well, I have a lot of points on that.
Go for it.
Okay. For me, so yeah, there's, you know, there's like obviously kind of like play-by-play and color is like the typical pairing. And I'm always play-by-play now.
Mm-hmm.
And when whoever I'm paired with ends up being color. And we try and then have sort of different focuses. And so for me as play-by-play, I try to be a lot more focused on players, play style, player history, previous stats, things like that, how matches have went for different people, matchups against other people, how they went. So like if someone's going to go up against another player, I just already know, I don't really need to think about it, what happened the last time they faced that player, where it was, that sort of thing. And then for sure, strengths and weaknesses are totally on my mind. That's what I'm talking about for different players. And then what tends to happen is then the color caster talks more about what is happening in each particular round in terms of like specific meta, or more niche things like that. And then I trend more toward like what the person, what they're thinking, what they're going to want to do, what they're looking for, all of those things. It can be very fluid. Some casting partners I work with now will be a little bit more fluid on those roles. Some it's really strict.
Right.
And that just is kind of like how things have developed with different people I cast with.
Yep.
But yeah, like I'll for sure call out metas and say where a location is and things like that. But that tends to be more the color casting role, at least in GeoGuessr.
Okay. Interesting. Has there been points where you've come into a situation where you've sort of frozen? I've had previous experiences with a few casters, and there's like, it's not stage fright, but you get choked up. And I guess it's rough to sort of, is it rough to recover from that potentially? But then you can sort of ease your way out of it. So it's a bit of a balancing act.
Yeah, I almost started laughing when you said that because... I had a memory that the most recent event I did was an event where us casters were in Sweden on site. This was just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
But the players were online. And I got paired up with someone named Der Ziggy, who's a caster from Germany. And he used to do some of the Rainbolt tournaments with me back in the day and stuff. And very good friend, longtime friend. And it was my first time getting paired with him on a cast. And as like... good friends, we tend to mess with each other a bit,
right?
And we were on a cast and he said something that made me want to laugh so badly that I lost all train of thought. Like,
oh,
I just
really?
Lost everything. He just said something so funny that I was like, and I looked at him and I was like, and then I just was like, tried to get back into it. But there was probably like a two, you know, it felt like 15 seconds, but it was probably like 2 to 3 seconds of silence in actuality. Where I just, for the first time in my entire casting career, like actually had to hold back laughing.
Right.
And granted, he said something funny, but it was not like super publicly funny, if that makes sense. So like if I had laughed, most people watching would have just been like, huh? So that's why I like, held it in. Like he kind of made an inside joke, but like really niche, hard to explain exactly. Like I don't remember the exact words he said, but anyways, that was probably the most time I've actually ever been flustered. Otherwise, I would say in other settings this could be considered a bad thing, but in this setting I think it's good. I can kind of just ramble if I need to. Like I'll find the words most of the time.
Okay.
And So if I need to fill space, I usually figure it out. Like, I remember having to do my first ever, like, fill, you know, as they're called, when a technical difficulty happened at the first ever GeoGuessr World Cup. And I swear we had been filling for like 4 minutes probably before I was like, we've just been talking and like nothing's really happened in the game, you know? And then the producer after was like, dude, great fill. Like, you covered that perfectly. And I was like, thanks. kind of wasn't like, that wasn't like consciously like, oh, I'm going to fill. Like,
yeah.
Can't let the audience know that there's something wrong. It was just like, because also like I didn't know the term fill, you know?
Right.
I was getting all these words in my ear and I was like, I don't know what they're talking about. And I would like ask people in between segments like, hey, like the producer said this, like what is that? And then they would teach me. And okay. So I've literally just learned by being thrown in the deep end.
Wow. For me, the impression that I get is that you really, I guess, flourish in the role. Like, it comes pretty naturally to you.
I would say so, yeah. It feels very natural. I do feel like I'm a natural performer, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I was told that in a lot of life and did a lot of theater shows. And no amount of people really, like, makes me nervous to be in front of. Yeah. Or just a new person in general. I tend to feel quite comfortable just wherever. And I think if anything, sometimes when I know the pressure is on and the lights are on, I actually am way better at it than if I was doing it like right here.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's no like, I guess, underlying anxiety that builds up prior to a cast, or is there? There might be a little bit, but then lights out and that's the way we go.
Honestly, I think the very first World Cup, I had about 3 seconds of nerves when it was like time. It was like time, and I was like, and then I was like, okay, I'm good. But there was, right when it started, it was like,
boop. Yeah.
We're good.
Ready to go.
And then since then, honestly, no. And it took a lot of work to be able to get to that point. I don't want to sit here and just pretend that I'm just naturally like that. But it took like a childhood of being up on stage.
Yeah.
Where a lot of my shows, I mean, I remember when I was like 15, I did my first ever musical and I had like a big, pretty big role, and it was in front of like 500, 600 seat audience. And I remember my first entrance before going on, I was so nervous, you know what I mean? Shaking, like feeling like I'm going to throw up, stomach hurts, like just everything for like 10 minutes, and then went on stage. And once I got out there and started, it went away.
Nice.
But it's years of having to do that that's made this sort of stuff feel super, super casual for me.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. It's like just those vicarious experiences lead to that intrinsic confidence that you've developed over time, which just allow you to, I guess, hone on previous experiences. Like once you do it first for the good, like once you do it well for the first time, every other time after that, it's like, well, I've done it before. Why can't I do it now? Sort of thing.
Yeah. Totally.
Love that. Awesome. How does casting does casting differentiate in game modes? I really like NRPZ, just the fact that you have, this is what you've got, deal with it, bro.
Yeah.
Like sort of thing.
Yeah.
What does that come down to from a casting perspective?
Yeah, so as I was kind of talking about earlier with the types of things you can talk about when casting GeoGuessr, there's the sort of like two sides. There's like the player info, thought process, sort of following more the moves they make with the mouse on the map. Then there's like in-game meta.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a Brazilian pole. Oh, you know, whatever, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say in moving, you talk the most about this stuff because they're moving around and you're going to keep seeing new things. And so each time you're going to be like, oh, wait, he just saw that French bollard, so we know we're in France.
Mm.
or, oh my God, this, they found a sign now, finally. They can use that. What's on it? Let's read it. Okay, it says that, that, that.
Yeah.
And then as you go down the game modes, then to no move, then you have less of that sort of stuff to talk about. And then you go to NPC, and then you just have one image, and then it's even less.
Yeah.
And so it's like inverse. And moving, you'll talk the most about in-game meta, and an NPC, you'll talk the most about player, what are they thinking, the stress, the, like, it, I hope that makes sense, but it becomes a lot more about, like, just being like, wow, we are in the tiebreaker, the pressure's on, this is it.
Yeah.
You know, and then we can look at the image and we can talk about some things we see, but once we've talked about those things, you know, they're not going to look at any new information. So we're not, we kind of stop talking about that, and we, it tends a lot more toward, oh my God, you know, MK just opened the map and he's thinking here, and this other player is on the other side of the world right now, and what's going to happen? More like that sort of stuff.
Yeah, no, for sure. Oh, interesting. I think it's good to sort of have that differentiation between it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Definitely. Yeah.
Was there, and I guess progressively over time, like I've recently, after chatting with Zigzag, been on Plonkett like every night, just going through stuff, looking at stuff. Was there a requirement, not really a requirement, but was there, I guess, a desire for yourself once you got into casting to, I guess, continually update yourself with new metas and knowledge and, I guess, experience that you can sort of build on?
Yeah, so it's interesting because in my role of play-by-play, it's less important for me to actually be good at the game and much more important for me to be super engraved into the scene and know everything about the players and the matches and how to play GeoGuessr and more of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I would say I'm at a similar-ish knowledge level to when I was pro in like 2022.
Okay.
However, I've actually secretly, I'll leak it here, if anyone in my community ends up watching this, I've been secretly studying like pretty hardcore with a pro who will be playing in the world championship to get more caught up with some of like the really new stuff that I haven't spent as much time learning. But again, I'm not in a position where I need to be that insane. Well, it's the same way in most esports. Like the casters don't need to be competing level,
sure,
but they should be pretty good,
knowledgeable. Yeah,
and knowledgeable about the scene. So
yeah, for sure.
I'm sitting in a good spot there.
Yeah, no, I love it. I guess feeding off, I guess where your direction goes. Then you mentioned earlier about regional differences, and we see this in esports all the time. You know, OCE infamous for having expectations, but they're getting to land and not performing too well. I guess in Rocket League particularly.
Yes.
But a few moments where, you know, I've sort of carried the boys to a few good lane results. But obviously, you know, there is differentiators between, I guess, EU, NA, MENA, SAM, like so many regions in the world globally. But where in GeoGuessr, you know, if you're an OCE, you can scrim against, or you can play against someone in EU, or you can play against someone in NA, where that's not really possible in other games. I guess, where does regional differences tie into GeoGuessr in your mind? Why are so many good players originating from maybe EU or NA or there? What does that sort of come down to?
Yeah, that's a good question. One kind of glaring thing on that topic that people always bring up is that, especially for OCE, like Australia, New Zealand, they tend to be NMPZ mains like Zigzag. Because, yes, you can play with anyone around the world, but you move around Google Maps slower because of your ping to the Google servers in places like Australia.
Okay.
So if you want to play the moving mode, for instance, if you're in a country that has a Google server, you can move way faster.
Right.
Zigzag, for instance, again, he hates moving.
Yeah,
and you know,
I heard about that a lot from him, to be honest.
I'm sure. I actually do listen to that. Yeah,
that's getting good. Yeah,
I'm sure I hear from him enough. He's like one of my best friends, so I hear about it from him too. But yeah, it is not fun for him, especially in certain parts of Australia. It's worse too. where you just will move way slower than someone you're playing against if they're in Europe, for instance. And so they'll just get to information faster, and they'll use that information faster, and they'll guess faster. So that can be rough. Otherwise, though, honestly, I think part of the reason that EU and kind of NA are the powerhouses of Geo, I guess that's re could be relatively normal for a lot of games, but not Rocket League, actually, as of just recent. I want to talk about MENA, but I think it has to do a lot with what create where like creators are. So Rainbolt created a really big NA scene because he is American, and then there are a lot of EU creators as well. And I would also just venture to say that EU education probably focuses more on the world than NA. So NA was like a little bit later overall. Maybe that has to do with it because it's like actually sort of related to education and culture. But otherwise, I haven't thought too much about that of why the scene is strong in certain places. France has a lot of really good players because that has been a scene that's been fostered for many, many years. They've had a league going called La Ligue. That's a French GeoGuessr league, and they've had that going for so long.
Cool.
So that has fostered a really big French scene and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I think it's definitely interesting, and I didn't know about the ping difference. That makes a bit of sense for sure.
Yeah. And that's really only that is only an issue in like the moving. So like, you know, if Zigzag wants to play Blinky in France and they play no move, it'll be like the same experience. But moving will be very different.
Tricky. Interesting. I guess when it comes to LAN formats, and I guess then coming in person and having moving, panning, and then NMPZ, do you think if the order was changed or if there was a different order, there'd be different results? Because obviously t players tend to specialize in different areas.
Definitely, I
Like if
do.
we had NMPZ first, we'd say.
I mean, Zigzag would be in the World Championship, probably. I have a lot of thoughts about this. I've talked a lot with the production company who does our events, Black Molly Entertainment and GeoGuessr themselves. Black Molly Entertainment don't really make the like those types of decisions, but they are the most influential when talking to GeoGuessr about those decisions. But yeah, at the end of the day, GeoGuessr makes all those decisions, and as you know, esports is a venture that doesn't create a ton of direct money for the company. So their entire focus is always on just what's going to make them the best show, you know, what's going to make the best TV, basically. And so for them, they really believe, and I do think this train of thought really does make sense. They do believe that moving is the easiest to understand as a new viewer or new player, because when you've never played GeoGuessr and you boot up the game, you're not going to try NMBZ probably, right? That's really only the top percent of players that l really like that. The, you know, 80% of casual players who open up GeoGuessr like once a week are going to play like a couple rounds of moving probably, and that's it. And so they want, if those people tune into a broadcast, the highest chance of that being what they see, because they believe that is the easiest to understand as a new viewer. I totally see where they're coming from, and they're like, we have the numbers to back it, and we don't ever want to change it. And they don't like changing things, which I would presume is probably pretty standard in a lot of esports, you know. But I don't know if I 100% agree with it. I feel like as a new viewer, if you loaded in and you saw them guessing off one image, you'd maybe even be more mind blown. Okay, but then it becomes, that's why they save it for tiebreaker. So makes it stay special, so it's
Right.
rarer.
Rarer. Yeah. More high
And
pressure.
then, yeah, so they've created a storyline around game modes, basically, in terms of like a broadcasting storyline
Okay.
where you get to that tiebreaker and it will inevitably be the most exciting because it's the hardest.
Yeah.
And so that creates a nice progression in matches
Yeah.
for viewers and for excitement, and that's why they keep it that way.
Okay.
Do I think there should be a place for other game modes to shine? Absolutely. Personally, for me to play, moving is my least favorite, but there are people who love it. I mean, I love watching it. I love casting it. I have a great respect for the game mode, but just personally playing, I probably like no move the most.
Okay.
But yeah, I think if we had a different format, results would look different at many events.
Yeah.
Not drastically, but yeah, they would be different for sure.
Yeah, interesting. One thing that comes to mind, and I remember back to Gamers 8, the first Gamers 8, which is now EWC. That I went to back in 2022. For Rocket League, they spiced it up, and instead of doing 3v3, they had 3v3, 2v2, and 1v1. And
Oh, I actually remember this.
the first team, everyone had to play 3v3, and then I think it was the loser either picked 1v1 or 2v2. So it could be interesting in this fact is everyone plays moving, and then the loser then gets to pick potentially NMPZ, right? So they get to pick what they like if they lost.
Yes. I'm a proponent of a pick ban system.
Yeah.
I've talked about that before on my stream and YouTube. Like, it's just so hard because you're balancing good product and good esport, you know? And I think it would make the best esport for a pick ban, but I see where they're coming from with their current format for the show.
Yeah.
So it's tough. But yeah, I think having they want there to be other types of tournaments. And I know that they're really open to having,
That's cool.
you know, some other group say we want to put on a GeoGuessr or esport competition, like, yeah, whatever. I'm trying to think of examples and I'm not thinking of any, but you know, some other tournament organizer to come in and do something, and they can do whatever format they want. They just want their, you know, it's now called the World Championship format to be that, because that's what they like. But pick ban would be dope.
Yeah,
It would be
what if you could ban a
sick.
country?
That would be crazy. Oh my God. Oh, because so many players have a specialty in like a certain country, and you like go up against them and you
Yeah,
like, yeah,
exactly.
you're
You ban
not,
that country, bro.
you don't get Russia, you know,
Yeah.
or like whatever. That would be crazy.
Yeah.
That's I've never I don't know I've never heard anyone have that idea. I don't know how.
Yeah, I
You're
feel like there's so
innovating.
many things. Yeah, I know. Get me on board. Get me on a casting table. There's so many, yeah, I guess things that could pertain to differences, mix-ups, make it fun and make it special. And it doesn't have to be like in an official one. It can be like a trial to see how it goes, see how it gets received, see how it plays out.
For sure.
And I guess that's how things develop, right?
Yeah, totally.
Interesting.
Totally.
What's your, I guess, on the country, off the top of your countries, what's your favorite country to cast as soon as it comes
Ooh,
up on the screen?
cast.
That's the one that comes up.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So I will say, surprisingly, US is probably my least favorite, even though I'm from the US.
Really? Was that?
I think right when I started playing GeoGuessr, my goal and the reason and I was drawn to the game was to see the rest of the world.
Right.
And so I just like never really cared about learning the US.
Yeah.
So that's kind of stuck with me, I think.
Okay.
Like even now, I'm like, ah, it's the US. But there's a lot to be learned in the US for GeoGuessr, and it's such a big country. You get a lot of points there. But favorite for casting. It's weird because in terms of just looking at, you know, I love the pretty countries, obviously. So like if I'm casting and I see like a beautiful Norway, it's just like, oh, look how gorgeous the, you know, but I won't do that exactly, but I do enjoy that. Recently I've learned a lot of India. So
Really interesting.
Getting some India is fun.
Cool.
There's just like, it's so huge, and there's such a wide variation of plant types that can be used. And I find that sort of information in GeoGuessr to be really interesting. Just sort of like looking at the different types of palm trees that you're getting and whatever, and knowing that those will be in certain pockets of the country, and it's so big. So I do find that quite interesting. I don't know really though if I have like a favorite overall. I'm trying to think. I don't really think I do, honestly.
Bit of a mix.
I don't. I tend to. I like Latin America a lot in casting too, actually, more than I like Europe. Europe is one of my least favorite parts to try and guess in GeoGuessr. Like, I don't know why. It's just like a lot of it looks so similar. It can be tough. But yeah, I'll just go with all of that that I just said,
Yeah,
but
no, I
no
love
like
it.
standout.
Yeah, okay, interesting. Is there, do you think, something just came up to me, like, do you think there's really an end towards metas? Like, is there a, are we going to get to a stage whereby, yeah, we know everything now? So this, it's always going to get to a point where this
Yeah,
is it.
that's a question for sure. I would say that would be a fear if the nature of Google Street View wasn't that they constantly post new coverage as a company. So you can learn, like, okay, well, let me just try and think of some simple example. Okay, Kenya, the country of Kenya. Their Google car had one of the most blaring metas of all time. You would see this little like snorkel
The
looking thing.
snorkel, yeah.
Yeah. And that was classic. And so Kenya was just like the easiest thing of all time if you just knew the snorkel. And then 2 years ago, the country got totally like overdone with the coverage.
Oh, okay.
And now it's all Generation 4. I don't know if you maybe Zigzag talked to you about like the generations of cameras and stuff like that. But it's much more saturated, much more bright. And it's a new car. And so, bam, you've now lost a meta,
No
you
snorkel.
know? Nor snorkel. Or we had our EMEA regional major just recently. And right before it, Namibia got coverage for the first time ever, like a week before. And everyone was like, are they going to put it in the tournament? Like, we don't know it. Like, we don't know
What
this.
does it even look like?
You know? Like, yeah. So that's the thing. Like, you think GeoGuessr players are like general geography nerds, but they're Google Street View nerds.
It's
You know what I mean? Like, it's not really about just like geography. So much of the meta is about the Google Street View coverage, and people check the copyright for when it was taken, and the Google car, and smudges on the camera, and like insane stuff. And so, as long as Google as a company continues to drive their Street View cars around, I don't think there's too much of a worry that we'll learn everything, which is actually daunting, because there'll always be new stuff.
Hey, a new country is just a new DLC, right?
Exactly. That is what we call them. Oh, and then like Vietnam just dropped too. Like, yeah. So crazy. Anyways.
What's a country that's not on there that you'd like to be on there?
Okay. So the go-to answer for this question, I would say, for like most GeoGuessr players, is everybody always says China
That's what I was thinking.
because it's massive and there are so many people there.
Be crazy.
And it's not on Street View because the government won't allow it. So I have to say that as someone in the GeoGuessr community, that's a bit of like a cop out answer. So I'll give you another two. Let me pick one more that's like actually unique. Well, I would say like really Central America and Africa is missing a decent bit. So some of those would be quite fun. Oh, actually, no. You know what? I'm going to say Pakistan because I think the northern Pakistan mountains would be
That'd be crazy.
gorgeous. There's like huge mountains. Or Nepal, actually. Nepal would be like another free one. I really like very pretty Google Street View locations.
Yeah.
I love to just like see random beauty in the world. So I'll go with those. I'll go
love
with
that.
Nepal, Pakistan for the mountains.
Okay. Sick. W.
Yeah.
Epic. Before we jump into the rapid fire questions to wrap us up, I was just thinking, what does the future look like for GSL in terms of longevity? And I think I chatted with Oscar about it as well, is the prevalence or the potential of orgs. Obviously,
yes.
Esports has a lot of orgs that get into games. Do you think that we're going to see potentially upcoming, you know, players repping an org?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's where me personally, I've really been hoping for that sort of push to start. And it sort of has. We have a player on Imperial right now.
Oh, cool.
And then to my understanding, the player who got third at the recent APAC regional major is in talks with a Japanese org.
Okay.
He's from Japan.
Yep.
But yeah, orgs would be... That would be the step. It's tough looking at the future of GeoGuessr as an esports because people do have a lot of mixed opinions on sort of what's going to happen. I think orgs showing interest would help quite a bit.
Yeah.
The question is sort of how do you do that? I guess I'd probably have to look at more, you know, esports where it's single players, because I think when I tend to think of orgs, right, even in Rocket League, you know, you're looking at G2 versus Carmine Corp.
Yeah.
You know, you're not looking at the three players versus the three players. You think about it like the org, and that's what is, you know, kind of enticing these orgs to be drawn in is they get their names like everywhere. It's there. It's like G2. And it would be a little different in GeoGuessr because it's like individuals.
Yeah.
Like it wouldn't be like you wouldn't have a player on G2 and then they'd just start being called G2.
Mm.
But they'd call like G2. What blank.
Yeah.
I
guess they do it
so in... I don't know. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, they do it in StarCraft where people are repping orcs, but they're still called their name. Like Serral is repping Basilisk, but he's still called Serral.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess it would just be like that. Yeah. I mean, I was just at DreamHack Dallas. We had an event there. Our America's regional major was there. And... the guy who won that is a player named Radusi or RC, and he's been in the game a long, long time, and he's a very good friend. And me, him, and another friend, we had an hour break before semis and finals. We were just kind of walking around at booths, and we stumbled across at the SSG booth, and I was like, "Yo, RC, do you want me to like try pitching you to them? Like, should I just try like pitching GeoGuessr Esports? Like, see if anyone is like actually like." Works here.
Yeah.
And I went up to the booth and I was like, hey, like you guys like work for SSG? And this one guy was like, oh yeah, I'm the COO. And I was like, hey.
Here's a shot.
And we chat about GeoGuessr and, you know, I was like, come watch the finals soon and, you know, consider the game if it's of interest to you. And they're in a slightly unique position because they're, I can't remember exactly how to word it, but they're, you know, they don't take, like, investments, right? I'm pretty sure is SSG's sort of whole thing.
Right.
And so they were kind of talking about how, like, if they did get into GeoGuessr, they would probably need to, you know, get in, like, the item shop and stuff like that so they can make money that way. And I was like, well, we have avatars, so you definitely could. And he was like, okay. but he did seem genuinely interested. He was a very cool guy. And he did come over, watch the finals, and I put him in touch with... one of the co-founders of the game, so I don't know where that went, but
yeah,
you know, there's like this borderline interest. I even had Vitality message me a couple months ago saying, hey, can we set up a meeting? I'd love to talk about GeoGuessr Esports with you. We're looking into it. And then that kind of like fizzled out. So it's like, we're like almost at that level where orgs are interested, but it's like not big enough. I hope that if this World Championship in August does well enough, it'll take us to that level where it's more normal. But yeah, we'll see. The game's got to not mess it up is what's got to happen here, which is a worry for some people, myself in some way.
Yeah.
People, you know, these guys who are running the esport aren't they don't really know much about esports.
Right.
In GeoGuessr, like they weren't hired on the GeoGuessr team as like esports people.
Gotcha.
They, you know, they're like the two heads of the esports part of GeoGuessr at the GeoGuessr company are one of the co-founders.
Yeah.
So, you know, like a developer basically. And then a guy they initially had hired as sort of like the community manager.
Mm-hmm.
And so his job for a while was, you know, community outreach and sort of just like dealing with like content creators and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're running an esport and they have never run an esport before. So there's some worry there.
Yeah.
Because there have been some decisions. Yeah. There have been some decisions people haven't been super happy with.
Yeah.
But I still believe in the esport a lot. I think that potential is really big because of the nature of the game.
Mm.
Because it is something that you could sit down with your mom.
Exactly.
And she would be like, oh, whoa, like I get this. You know, it's not like CS. I'm not like running around shooting people, or I'm not like driving around in a flying car, hitting the ball. You know, yeah. It's like, not that that isn't sick, because it is, but it's like, it doesn't matter who you are. If you pulled up a GeoGuessr esport stream, you would be able to understand
what's going on,
what's happening, and it would there's a shock factor.
Yep.
Instantly.
Yeah.
So I think the potential is really, really great, and hopefully we'll just continue to keep growing, but we'll see.
Sounds like to me you need to jump on with GeoGuessr as their esports division leader or something.
Honestly, I mean, there are people way, way more experienced than me. But I could definitely help them. I always try if they listen to me.
Yeah. I mean, you're an OG. How can they not?
Yeah, yeah. They do come to me for some stuff, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Legendary. Awesome. I had one last thing. I guess on the prevalence of GeoGuessr esports from a player perspective, is it tricky? Because how big are prize pools? Is it sustainable for players to, I guess, invest a lot of time to try and become a GeoGuessr pro? Like, is there an enticing factor towards that? And I guess the realistic reality of income.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's a great question. That's part of one of the big reasons people are really hoping orgs get involved.
Right.
Because currently there are I would say two people right now that are truly doing GeoGuessr full time.
Okay.
And one of them is Blinky, who won the last world championship, and the other is Zigzag, and that's because he does content.
Yep.
And is pro.
Yep.
So like amongst pro players, who's doing GeoGuessr full time? It's really just them. Because it is not sustainable enough. But it becomes really tough because to stay at the top, it's a full time thing. So it's working right now because a lot of our pro players are in college and they're on summer break.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are basically doing this as their full-time job, but they're living at home.
Yeah.
But really, like, I have these friends that are pros, and they'll spend 10 hours a day just studying, you know? Mm. And it's takes a lot of time. And we started a league this season. We had like a 21-week league for the first time.
Yeah.
And it was just every Sunday. But even still, many players felt like, I have a whole nother life going on. And to stay at my peak for 21 weeks,
that's rough.
Made it really difficult. Yeah. So again, GeoGuessr's in this really weird spot where it has the potential to be big enough to warrant something like a 21-week season.
Yeah.
But we're not exactly there in terms of like funding the players and broadcasts and everything where it really makes viable sense.
Yeah, it's tricky. Mm.
Yeah, hopefully tricky spot to be.
Sort of, develop and continue to push the future. Because as you said, you know, viewability from a spectator perspective is really good.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Legendary. All right, beautiful. We'll get into some rapid-fire questions. So first thing that comes to mind. See how we go. What is the best GeoGuessr map of all time, or your favorite?
A Diverse World doesn't exist anymore, but it was the best.
Okay. Country that you never want to see in the round when you're playing?
Russia.
Okay. Country that you do want to see. Country that you want to be like, yep, I got this straight away.
Argentina.
Okay. Interesting. Love it.
I love guessing that country.
Dream location you'd like to cast from.
Cast from? I just did it in Japan. I won't lie, actually, in Tokyo.
That would have been nice.
We were just in Tokyo. That was probably my... Yeah, I'm going to say I got to do it. I got to do the dream location.
Did you spend a little bit of time afterwards? Sort of looking around?
Beforehand.
Of your
beforehand, yeah. I had like a good chunk to just like explore. It was amazing.
Lovely. How many languages have you learnt to help with GeoGuessr?
That's a hard question because I wouldn't say I actually like know them.
Know the language, but you know.
But you kind of learn how to.
Yeah.
I can identify like hundreds of languages. Not hundreds, but you know what I mean. Like many, many languages. Can I read them? Not really. But I can make out important words and look at text and tell you, oh, that's that language.
Mm-hmm. I think Zigzag was saying that Indonesia has so many different domains or regional things. Regional places that's tricky to learn.
Yeah. That can be hard.
That can be pretty tricky.
Yeah. They're in the depths. When I was pro, we didn't know as many languages.
Yeah.
Now some of the pros today can like read like 10, 15 languages, you know? Like actually truly fully read and understand, which is absurd.
Dang, that's crazy.
Just for GeoGuessr.
That's wild. Any go-to phrases that you say on cast?
I tend to say the words locked in quite a bit.
Locked in? Write that.
Yeah, in different scenarios. I tend to accidentally reuse the phrase right here, right now sometimes, like going into big moments.
Okay.
Big country, big points is a classic kind of... just statement to make for like all casters.
Yep.
It's become a little bit of just not a meme, but like a little bit of a, I don't know, just like a GUS or eSport kind of phrase.
Okay.
The other one is there's a legendary Paula clip where he's casting with Rainbolt and he goes, "Is that game, Trevor?" And we'll now say that when casting.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes as a joke, because there was just this round that like it was like not going to be the end of the game, and Paula just was like, "Oh my god, is that game, Trevor, with the Maltese?" And now like everybody says that, so I've even said it casting now because it's like another one of those sort of things, like big country, big points that people just sort of know.
Okay, sick, love that, awesome. Favorite location or like unique location that's happened on stream. That's memorable.
Like in an event.
Yeah.
Favorite memorable location. I mean, one that comes to mind is at our last World Championship, a location at the venue showed up, like on the street outside.
I think I saw that on YouTube. Actually.
I think that was definitely like done on purpose, but was a fun moment. Do I have any other like really standouts? One location that I always remember is there was a game in the very first GeoGuessr World Championship. It was Consus versus Fao. The end of their NMPZ game, they got an insanely rural, middle of nowhere Siberian Russia. And Loki just got like some goosebumps thinking about this because this was, I told you earlier about this guy Fao. Like nobody thought he was going to win. Consus is the guy who won the first World Cup.
Yeah.
And Fao was up against him and made it to game 5, NMPZ. And it was like super back and forth. Like literally anybody could have won, which was blowing everybody's mind because Consus was a player who thought people thought would do really well. Fao, not as much. And then we just hit this round with like really high multiplier, middle of nowhere Russia. And they both guessed like on the road, but just different parts of the road. Consus ended up being the one closer.
Crazy.
And took it to the finals. But I'll say that as my standout location.
Love that. Awesome. Favorite food? cuisine.
Ooh, favorite food. It's a three-way tie.
Yep.
Not all together. Okay. Never eat this all together. But three-way tie between chicken pho,
okay,
tacos,
mm-hmm,
and like a quality burger.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah.
Love that. Awesome. And favorite non-GeoGuessr game to relax with?
Non-GeoGuessr game to relax with? Rocket League.
Rocket League. I probably already knew that one.
Yeah. Just hop in free play and just bang the ball around for hours.
And if you didn't get into GeoGuessr casting, what casting do you think you could have fallen into?
Oh, if I had ended up falling into a different one, it probably would have been Rocket League.
Okay.
I honestly, I would still love to cast Rocket League.
Mm.
I don't know how you, I feel like they've got a pretty tight-knit casting community there, but especially when I was like really paying attention to RLCS, you probably could have thrown me in and I would have been able to yap like any of them.
Okay.
Up there.
Maybe I can make some calls. We'll say. Maybe I can make some calls.
Wait. I'll say no.
Legendary. Early, and then last one, early bird or night owl?
Night owl, for sure.
W. Legendary.
Yeah. Gamers.
That's true. Natural.
Yeah.
For everyone listening in, or I guess more specifically for those younger guys that are grinding away at GeoGuessr and, you know, really trying to nail in and maybe even look to turning pro one day, any advice for those guys to what to focus on, what to sort of do individually?
Yeah, I mean, I would say a couple big main things. Stay in it.
Mm-hmm.
Just you can't give up. I mean, that's pretty expected of a response, but you know, it takes a lot of time to be pro in anything.
Yep.
So if that's really what you want to do, there's going to be a lot of time that needs to get put in. The other one I would say is try and meet people in GeoGuessr. I think that's really important. One of the big parts of GeoGuessr and the way it gets learned is through connections, and you meet someone and they're really good at this and you're really good at this, and then you two teach each other the things you're good at. And I think that's a really special thing. Obviously, there's a ton of public information that exists now that didn't used to exist, like Plonkit.
Yep.
I was one of the people who started Plonkit, by the way. Fun fact.
Oh, really?
Left. Yeah. But it was me and three other guys. And
okay.
We just like, that's a whole story. But anyways, Plonkit has a lot of resources, but then it's a starting place. Right. Even though there's so much there, it's a starting place. You definitely got to meet people and you got to get on map-making.app. Okay. This is the way to make maps if you want to make maps. And you got to just look at coverage. Like more than half of the way that pros learn the game now is not playing the game of GeoGuessr. They're studying coverage.
Mm.
And then going into game and seeing it in game. So that's a big thing too.
Okay.
So yeah, I'd say those things.
Beautiful. I'm sure a lot of listeners can take that away. That's a pivotal point. And I think map making and looking at coverage is, an excellent point.
Yeah. Yes. It's super important. Super important.
Awesome. Yeah. For everyone listening, where can we find you? What are the socials? Where can we reach out to you? You know, tune to your streams, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So I stream on Twitch. That's kind of mainly where I'm active. I do Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays at 2 p.m. Pacific time.
Mm-hmm.
And play all sorts of stuff, not just GeoGuessr. So we love to hang out and just yap there. And then I have started being more active on YouTube recently. You just search Project Bloom, or I think the technical username is Project Bloom TV.
Mm-hmm.
Been doing stuff there as well. And I have an Instagram, but it's mostly personal, a lot less GeoGuessr stuff. But if that's of interest to you for some reason, David E.P. Morris, that's my Instagram. And I do have a Twitter too. I don't use that much either, Project Bloom TV.
Okay.
Those are the places. I'm not a typical, like, you know, content person. I just kind of like have them all and post whatever I want. So
legendary. The way to do it sometimes, I think.
Yeah.
Awesome. Where did the name Bloom originate?
Ooh. Late night, 4 a.m. I needed a new username. And you know what I said to myself? I said, okay, if I was a pro player and someone was casting.
Oh, I like that.
What would be a good, like, one-syllable name to be like,
Yeah.
And I was, like, naming one-syllable words, and just Bloom popped in my head, and I was like, oh, that's actually a great I really like that. I feel like it represents me in a way. And I went for it. And then, of course, Bloom by itself was taken. So I added I added Project to the beginning. Project Bloom. That's where it was born.
W. Legendary. Awesome. Well, I'm sure I'll put all the links in the description as well and the website as well. So for everyone listening, you can find that down below. But Bloom, really appreciate it. I think you shared a really unique insight into the world of GeoGuessr from a commentating and casting perspective. And I think it's good to differentiate that between player and caster to sort of understand different domains of GeoGuessr, and I think probably provide a little bit more of the history of GeoGuessr and, I guess, early stage tournament days and, I guess, where the esports is going to go, hopefully, in the future.
Yeah. I really appreciate you having me on. I feel quite passionate about the GeoGuessr esports, and I have a lot to say about it. So this was lovely, and I also love RLCS, so that also made this very lovely.
Awesome. Yeah, hopefully, we'll see what happens in the future.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
W, awesome.
We'll be in touch.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I really appreciate it, Bloom, coming on and sharing some insights. I'm sure a lot of people can take it away. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Peace.
Bye, everybody.